Last several Sundays, we've been talking about the value of the soul. We showed that God's grace reflects the value of the soul. We showed that the Lord's death reflects the value of the soul. And then we showed that the Lord's resurrection reflects the value of the soul. There are many passages which illustrate that particular matter to help us appreciate the value of the soul. Jesus indicated in Matthew 16 and verse 26 that a person's soul is his most valuable possession. Well, in my judgment, the passage that we've been studying for quite a while now, Romans 8 and verse 28, should help us to appreciate the value of the soul. In this verse, the Apostle Paul wrote, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." That passage does not say that everything that happens to a child of God is good. As a matter of fact, we have a number of passages that show that God's people suffer just like everyone else. As a matter of fact, the man who wrote that, the Apostle Paul, wrote about some of the things that he suffered as a result of being a servant of the Lord. He suffered tremendously. But his conclusion was, all those things work together for the furtherance of the gospel. So he could reflect upon the hardships that he had faced in his life and understood very well that all things do indeed work together for good. I appreciate the certainty of this particular verse. It says, we know. There's no uncertainty about that at all. We know it because the Bible says it, and that ought to settle it. But over and over again, this particular principle is illustrated in the Bible. And we've been looking at a number of illustrations. That is how God has worked all things together for good in the lives of some of his faithful servants. Right now, we're looking at Joseph in the book of Genesis. And the book of Genesis shows how that principle applied to a number of great Bible characters. But right now, we're interested especially in the life of Joseph. Now, in our last lesson, we covered Genesis 41, verses 1 through 32. And this evening, we want to cover the last verses of this chapter, that is, verses 33 through 57. But before we cover those verses, let's spend just a moment or two in review of what we covered in our last lesson, because all of this is interrelated. As chapter 41 begins, we see that Pharaoh, who was the leader of Egypt, had two dreams. Now, these dreams to us might seem to be somewhat strange, but they were filled with symbolism. One dream was about seven fat cows and seven lean cows. The other dream was about seven good ears of grain and seven lean ears. Well, those dreams bothered Pharaoh. I suppose if I had those dreams, I'd be bothered too. But those dreams bothered Pharaoh, and while he called upon the wise men and the magicians of Egypt to explain those dreams to him and give the interpretation, no one could. Well, that brings us to verses 9 through 13. And once again, we read about Pharaoh's chief butler. Remember that the butler and the baker had offended Pharaoh. They did something to upset him, and he had them cast into prison. And it just so happened while they were in prison that Joseph was put in prison. He was put in prison because Potiphar's wife accused him of molesting her. That was a false charge. Nevertheless, Joseph was put into prison where the baker and the butler were also in prison. And, of course, Joseph had opportunities to interpret their dreams. And the interpretation came to pass. The baker lost his life, but the butler was restored to his position. But when Joseph interpreted the butler's dream, he said, "Remember me." Unfortunately, The butler forgot him. However, he did finally remember Joseph. Pharaoh had some dreams and no one could interpret them, but the butler at this point remembered that Joseph had interpreted his dream as well as the dream of the baker. And Joseph's interpretations were accurate. Well, Pharaoh was told by the chief butler how Joseph had interpreted his dream. Joseph was brought from prison, and he was able to appear before Pharaoh. At that point, Pharaoh told Joseph about his dreams, and Joseph was able to interpret them. Can you remember how Joseph gave credit to God for interpreting dreams? He didn't take any personal credit for that. He said it is God who interprets dreams. You know, that had to make an impression upon Pharaoh. It's my understanding that the Egyptians worshipped many, many gods. None of the wise men or magicians in Egypt could interpret Pharaoh's dreams. Can you imagine some of the wild ideas that people could come with about those dreams? Well, no one could interpret them. There was one young Hebrew man there, though, who was in prison, and he was summoned to appear before Pharaoh, and he stood up and said, "It is God who interprets dreams." You have to appreciate someone who has that kind of fortitude. But that's what Joseph did. Well, Joseph did interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. And according to verse 25 of chapter 41, both of these dreams had to do with something that God was about to accomplish. Joseph went on to explain the symbolism of the cows and the ears of grain. Now, the number 7 is very important. He showed that there would be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. Well, that was the basic interpretation of the dream. And Joseph, in interpreting the dream, explained what was about to happen. And because this dream was related twice to Pharaoh, Joseph indicated that there was no doubt about what God was going to accomplish. In other words, this was certain. There would be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. That's the information that we covered last week in the first part of chapter 41. Now let's turn our attention to the remaining verses of this chapter, verses 33 through 57. We will see that Joseph was appointed the second highest ruler in Egypt. Now that's quite an accomplishment for a young Hebrew slave. One who was hated by his brothers. At one point, they wanted to take his life. His life was spared. But he was sold to some merchant men who took him to Egypt, and there he was purchased by Potiphar. God was with him. God never left him. Joseph's family turned on him, but God never left him. And God blessed him. It wasn't long until he was in charge of all of Potiphar's possessions. God had some other plans, and that's where a wicked woman, the wife of Potiphar, entered the picture. She accused Joseph of molesting her. That caused Joseph to be put into prison. But God was with him. Joseph's master turned on him. A man who had trusted him. But God was with him. It wasn't long until he had the charge of all the other prisoners. That led to the opportunity to interpret the dreams of the butler and the baker that we've already talked about. And now we find in chapter 41 that same young man was appointed to be the second highest ruler in the whole land of Egypt. Now, Egypt was a great power at that time. very powerful nation. Joseph became the number two ruler. Let's first look at verses 33 through 36 of chapter 41. This is Joseph speaking. "Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine." This plan that Joseph submitted to Pharaoh had to do with putting someone in charge, not just anyone, but putting a wise and a discreet man in charge. Oh, how I wish politicians would follow that advice today, to put people in charge who were wise and discreet. You know, the Bible reveals some very important points to us in very subtle ways. That was a great need. Joseph had interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh. Now he has an opportunity to give some advice to Pharaoh, so he takes advantage of that opportunity. He suggested that a wise and a discreet man be put in charge of taking care of this matter. Look at verse 34. Joseph's plan that he submitted to Pharaoh also included some overseers. One man couldn't take care of all this by himself. He'd need some assistance. So Joseph suggested that overseers be appointed who would collect a fifth part during the 7 years of plenty. That indicates there'd be a surplus. Joseph did not say, "Let's collect a seventh for the 7 years of famine." No, he said, "Let's collect a fifth part." That was very wise. That's the plan that Joseph submitted to Pharaoh, that these overseers be responsible for collecting a fifth part. And according to verses 35 and 36, that plan would allow Egypt to have sufficient food during the 7 years of famine. You know, we'll find out later on in this same chapter that Egypt would not be the only land affected by the famine. Well, if Egypt had food, guess where people would come? Well, this plan would allow Egypt to have sufficient food during the 7 years of famine. Now, you think about, I don't know how many people lived in Egypt at the time. I'm supposing it was a lot of people. But think about livestock. Animals have to be fed. We're talking about a lot of grain. All of this had to be stored up during the 7 years of plenty. Joseph suggested that the fifth part be collected. That was very wise. Well, according to verses 37 to 41, Pharaoh agreed with this plan that Joseph submitted to him. Verse 37. "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. So thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt." According to verse 37, Pharaoh agreed with Joseph's advice. Pharaoh's servants also agreed. You know, I have to commend these servants of Pharaoh because this is a Hebrew young man telling them what to do. They weren't jealous. Now, in other books of the Bible, we read about some Hebrew political leaders who were despised by their fellow politicians. How about Daniel? He received a very high position, not only in the Babylonian government, but also in the Persian government. And there were some people who despised him. I think it's interesting that Pharaoh and Pharaoh's servants all agreed that Joseph's advice needed to be followed. Well, Pharaoh put Joseph in the position that Joseph suggested. Remember what he told Pharaoh? He said, put a man in charge who's wise and discreet. Pharaoh did that. But Pharaoh had good sense. He realized he didn't have to look any further. There was a wise and a discreet young man standing right before him. So Pharaoh put Joseph in the position that Joseph had suggested. Consequently, Pharaoh made Joseph the second highest ruler in Egypt. Pharaoh said, only in the throne will I be greater than you. That's quite a bit of authority. Now, I assume, I don't know because I wasn't there and it's not recorded for us, but I assume that there were probably some Egyptian people being groomed for, you know, eventually taking over Pharaoh. All of a sudden, here's a Hebrew young man that's appointed the second highest ruler in Egypt. But you know, I don't read about any jealousy. I don't read about any strife. I think people realized this was a serious matter, that one day the famine would be there. They had to be prepared for it. Well, Pharaoh made this promotion of Joseph official. Let's keep on reading at verse 42. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah. And he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Let's notice what Pharaoh did for Joseph. First, he removed his ring and gave it to Joseph. It's my understanding that a great ruler would have a ring that would be dipped in some type of ink, perhaps, and placed on a document to make it official. Pharaoh gave that ring to Joseph. He dressed Joseph in some fine clothes. He put a gold chain about Joseph's neck, and he put Joseph in his second chariot. Now, those are some great honors bestowed upon a young man who's 30 years old. Well, people were to show reverence to Joseph. They were responsible for bowing their knees before him. Joseph was given very high authority. Pharaoh gave Joseph another name. He also gave Joseph a wife. And notice the age of Joseph at this time. He was 30 years old when he was given this very high position. Well, that's interesting. I believe when Joseph's age is first mentioned, he was about 17 years old. A lot has taken place in this young man's life in 13 years. Now he's 30, and he's the second highest ruler in the whole land of Egypt. Well, let's notice how Joseph fulfilled those responsibilities that he was given. Verse 47, "And in the seven plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. The food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number." Remember, there were first 7 good years, and during those 7 good years, the land produced an abundant harvest. Joseph gathered up that grain, and he stored it up for the famine that would eventually be there. I'm not an authority on it, but I have read several times that there have been some large granaries discovered in Egypt that now are covered up with sand. You suppose they date back to when Joseph was the second highest ruler in Egypt? There was a lot of grain stored up. Well, you have to have a location where grain can be placed. Isn't it interesting that those have been discovered? Well, God blessed Joseph with 2 sons. Let's continue at verse 50. "And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil in all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim. For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction." Notice that Joseph's sons were born before the famine came. There would be 7 years of plenty. It was during those 7 years that the 2 boys were born. And I think their names are quite significant. I found out years ago, it was something I enjoyed, looking up the names and the meanings of those names of people in the Bible. You know, we usually don't place a whole lot of emphasis on that today, but names in the Bible carried a lot of significance. Let's look at Manasseh again. "For God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house." You know, Joseph had a lot to deal with in his life, but he learned to deal with it. And that affected the name that he gave to his firstborn son. Well, what about Ephraim? "For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction." Not only had God worked out things so that Joseph could deal with these unpleasant things from the past, but he realized that God had blessed him abundantly where he was. You know, those are 2 very special names, Ephraim and Manasseh. Well, the 7 years of famine finally did arrive. Verse 53. "And the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended. And the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands." Now notice that Egypt was not the only place affected by this famine. "But in all the land of Egypt, there was bread." Remember, Joseph had suggested that a 1/5 part be collected during the good years. All that grain would be stored up. "And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all lands. Well, Egypt was not the only land affected by the famine. There were other lands affected. But food was available in Egypt. Not only did the Egyptians come to Joseph to purchase food. Now, this is an important point. People from other countries also came to Joseph for food. Let's see, where did Joseph's family live? They lived in the land of Canaan. Was Canaan affected by the famine? It certainly was. Other people came to Egypt to purchase food. Well, that leads to Joseph's family eventually coming to Egypt. So remember, we're illustrating through this great story of Joseph how God works all things together for good on behalf of his people. Joseph has arisen from being a slave to being the second highest ruler in Egypt. But the stage was being set for something, and Joseph's family would eventually move to Egypt. And let's keep in mind that that was a fulfillment of a promise that God had made to Abraham a number of years earlier. Look at chapter 15. Let's read verses 13 and 14. And he, that is the Lord, said unto Abram, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. That's what God has said to Abraham. We're about to see that that's going to come to pass. Abraham's family will settle in Egypt, and there they eventually will develop into a mighty nation of people.